anyone knows who owns it now, I do have the spare set of keys for it.
Is that a threat or an offer? I don't know what that is.
You're welcome.
Thanks, I hate it. That's terrible.
Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the Classics World Chat Show. Now, Jeff Ruggles, editor of Classic Car Buyer, is on yet another holiday. He's probably sixth or seventh of the year. So we're joined by our guest drop-in guy, Jamie King, who works across all of our motoring titles and is our resident Ford expert. But
our resident substitute is back again.
Exactly. I wish I knew more about football, given the World Cup, to have some sort of analogy, but I have no idea what a substitute in football looks like.
He's the Manchester's to Jeff's Chelsea, or is that different? I don't know. I don't follow it.
I think we're drowning here, Joe. I think Jamie is laughing at us.
Isn't working at all.
At how pathetic our lack of football knowledge is. So, yes, I am joined by Jamie King and Joe Miller.
Hello there.
Hello.
That was a nice, smooth introduction, everyone. But anyway, there we go. Right, listen, into the news. So Jeff isn't here, but Classic Car Buyer did go to press actually last night, the 8th of July edition. And the main headline story is about traditional classics falling out of favour. This is sort of a wider market correction, I think they politely call it. There's some comments from John Mayhead at Haggerty, who does their price guide stuff, who seems to suggest that traditional British classics in the main, things like MGBs and Jaguar E-types and things like that, are roughly down between 15 and 20% compared to sort of immediate post-COVID values, sort of 2021. By direct contrast, 80s and 90s hot hatches are up by about the same amount, by about 20%, in some cases more. It's obviously an average and it would depend on what it is. But anyone trying to lay their hands on an Escort Cosworth or a Escort RS Turbo or something like that will probably be able to testify that these once 1500 quid scrappers are now no longer worth as such. So
what you're saying there is 205 GTIs are more desirable than E-types. That's what you're saying there.
Yes.
Well, in a roundabout way, yeah, actually. When you look at the percentage of what values have done, because for me, the barometer of the classic car market, or one of them anyway, is the Jaguar E-Type. Whatever E-Type values are doing, you can kind of get a feel for it. So in the mad COVID craziness when people were paying way over the odds, a Series 1 4.2 E-Type Roadster was £250,000 for a concourse car. Now, I've seen several of them in recent months for under 100,000. Which, bargain, I've got three of them. But in the last two or three years, a five-figure Series 1 E-Type was almost unheard of. So it gives you some idea that they are, big Heelys are down to sort of 30 and 40 when once they were in the 70s and the 80s. You know, there is a bit of a drop going on for cars of that era, I think.
Let's not delude ourselves. I mean, I've seen a 205 GTI up for £25,000 and you still won't get an E-Type for that. It's more the sort of the shift that it's denoting, yeah, which is that optimum market for that 60s classic is probably no longer there, and the peak demands that happened over the COVID period have now subsided. So there's kind of more a pragmatic valuation, I think, of those type of cars, whereas the demand for those 80s and 90s stuff is growing because the demand is growing. There's a greater pool of people that hanker after those cars. So those values will probably continue to rise. And it's not just your archetypal hot hatches, it'll be staples like, I don't know, Porsche 944s and 968s and stuff like that,
even stuff like Granadas and Volvo 240s are now going up in value. And I think, like you say, it's a generational thing.
So Jamie, look, as our resident Ford guy, is there an 80s or even 90s Ford hot hatch that you wish you still owned because you paid like a pittance for it and now it's worth a fortune?
One that springs to mind straight away is when I had my Cosy, because you couldn't drive the Cosy every day, I had a really, really tidy Mark IV XR3i that I wrapped around a lamppost. So I took a lamppost out with it, actually. Yeah, I paid about, probably, I can't remember, it was hundreds of pounds. It was like probably 500-600 quid for it to run that as a daily, because I couldn't run the Cosy at university and whatever else. So yeah, so I smoked around in that for a bit. That's one that does straight away springs to mind. That's probably still 30, 40 grand worth of stuff today, okay. Those 30 grand worth of stuff. And then the XR3 is what, 6-7 grand, I suppose?
Easily. For a mint one, you could be over 10 now.
Yeah. My old man had a Granada Cosworth as well, which is why I've got a real hankering to get a Granada Cosworth again at the moment.
Can we mark that off, all of us off, as our want of the week now? Because I'd quite happily have one of those.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
That should be our next product car, without a doubt.
Now, listen, while I've got you on Fords, Jamie, I also believe that our Mondeo ST24 project is now road legal and ready
Breaking
to drive.
News of the week. So don't worry about all your values and the stuff in CCB. That's not important. What's really important is this week, the Mondeo ST24 passed an MOT.
Yay!
So, yay. So it is road, well, it's not quite road legal because I haven't taxed it yet, which I've got to do today. But yeah, so once it's taxed, it'll all be on the road. There's still a few little things it needs sorting, like the window. The passenger window goes up and down and gets stuck.
So listen, there are videos on the ST24 project elsewhere on the channel and indeed on our socials, because Jamie's been keeping us up to date when he's been down at the workshop. But it does mean that Joe and I probably need to come down to your neck of the woods to do a sort of final project car wrap-up in the near future.
Final reveal, yes.
Yes, and if you want to do a comparison, the guy, Mark, at 4PartsRUs, his dad has just bought an ST220. So what we can do is the two ST Mondeos side by side. Sort of, so a 3-litre V6 versus a 2.5 V6.
I'm down for that. So much Mondeo content soon come.
Yes, indeed. Very much looking forward to that.
There's also a couple of Ford shows this weekend as well. So there's one local to me, which I might venture to on the Saturday, which is at Castle Coombe. And then it's the RS Owners Club National Day on the Sunday. So yeah, you're right. There's shows going on left, right and centre at the moment.
Well, listen, we should move on to our buying topic of the week, which I've said we go with sporting classic coupes. I guess I'm trying to lean into the sporting bit to avoid us going too far down the Grand Tourer route, but I've suggested we have no real budget, but I said here in our notes, I want to keep it real, and you've got a choice of three, and there's going to be a curveball that I'm going to add right towards the end, which we'll...
Yes.
We'll go.
I think this is an interesting topic because the coupe in the modern market, unless you're spending over £100,000 on an Aston or a Bentley or something, the coupe doesn't really exist very much anymore. I mean, you can get sort of a 2 Series or a GR86 or something like that, but time was, in the 90s in particular, everyone was making coupes, and now there's next to none. So
it's become a trim now, isn't it, rather than an actual model.
That's true.
Yeah, no, so I think this is a really interesting topic, and no, coupe SUVs do not count. They barely count as cars, let alone coupes.
I found it quite difficult, actually, because I'm more of a four-door saloon man, so like, I quite like big four-door cars. And so to try and find coupes, I was like, I struggled a little bit. So, yeah.
Well, let's start with you, Jamie. You can give us your first choice. So give us your best shot.
Well, my first one is, again, for nostalgia reasons. My very first car was an Opel Manta GTE. So obviously that's top of my list. I want one that's not rotten this time. But yeah, an Opel Manta GTE coupe in black, ideally. We like non-modified or standard cars here, but if I could have a modified one with the 3 litre straight six out of a Senator or the 24 valve dual ram engine. I remember when I had mine, and I was into modified cars, there was forums back then before it was Facebook and social media, and there was a guy on there who'd put a straight six into a Manta. I did V8 swaps and stuff like that, but this straight six one is the one that stood out for me, and that's, I just want one of them. I'd love someone like Retro Power. If I had a load of money, I'd give it to someone like Retro Power and go, build me that. And that's exactly what I'd want.
So it is possible then. You've seen a conversion done like that?
Yeah, been done.
Wow.
So cool.
That feels like a very large engine to get into that engine bay, but it must be...
Yeah, but you put a four-cylinder in, they look lost. So the four-cylinders with like the XE swaps and stuff, which are very easy to do because they're pretty bolted. You look like you're missing half an engine. There's enough room for another two cylinders at the front there, without a doubt.
I love Mantas, and that's possibly where part of my dislike of Caprice stems from, because my dad's had three Opel Mantas, and having driven one, I'm like, this is vastly better than a Capri in many ways. So yeah, and they're so cool. Yeah, I appreciate that massively.
So
yeah,
is that your first choice as well then, Joe?
You would have thought so. So I sort of ended up leaning into a Grand Tourer for my first one, because I've been very fortunate this year to drive a couple of Series XJs. I drove a Series 3 at Kim Ken's, and I drove that gorgeous Series 1 up at Morris Leslie. And for me, the ultimate variant of Series XJ was the XJC, where they made it into this gorgeous pillarless coupe. It has to have a vinyl roof, those are the rules. And just a beautiful car, because you take something that's already comfortable and can account for itself well in the corners and is fast and is luxurious, and then just add this extra layer of class and style and exclusivity. You know, I'm a sucker for an XJS, but for me the XJC is just next level. It's absolutely gorgeous, and it still sticks with me. 3-4 years ago now, we were filming at Kim Cairns on an autumn day, and there was a customer's car there that was an XJC, and the sun came out and hit it, and you and I just stood there for a few minutes in awe of the thing. It was just beautiful, and even today, that is, for me, one of the best looking cars ever made. There's lots of problems with the rigidity of them because they're pillarless and they're hugely expensive, but few cars are as glamorous or as stylish as a Jaguar XJC for me. Absolutely love them.
Would you have the straight six or the V12?
If pushed, I would probably go for the V12. I'd lean into the kind of grand touring nature of it. It's not a sports car, so why not go the whole hog?
Very nice. They're so rare and they're so gorgeous. And again, we talk about value.
Two pillarless coupes out of two so far then. So yeah,
Gosh, a bit worried. My choices are a little bit left field now after that. I'll go with my first one, which is a Mazda MX-3.
Ooh, that's niche.
Basically, this was inspired by the fact that I saw one for sale the other day. So if we weren't doing coupes as our buying roundup, it would probably be my want of the week. But specifically the V6 model.
Yes, that tiny little V6.
Yeah. I'm intrigued by that really compact V6. I remember the road test on Top Gear when they did it. What was striking about the MX-3 when it came out for me was that, and the road tests all said this, was that Mazda basically developed it with no compromise. It wasn't based on anything else. It was a custom-made chassis and floor plan, and the engine was just this lovely V6 engine, which was, so it felt solid and rigid. And I don't know, and it looked a little bit quirky. They're super rare now, you know.
Incredible,
I did find one for sale, which I'm obviously now going to struggle to find.
What size is the V6 in her?
It's a 1.8, I think, isn't it?
1.8, yeah. So the pistons must be like that. Must be absolutely tiny.
Yeah, here we go. So here's an MX3, 1997. And normally I don't like white wheels, but on that one, I actually quite like them.
They suit it. Yeah, that's period correct.
Yeah. So I thought that looked really good. And that was up for £3,000.
Do you know what? In the world of 90s Japanese cars, that's nothing, really.
It'll work forever and a day.
Yeah, that strikes me as very good value. I dread to think what a cam belt change is like on something like that. But
it'll basically rust before it breaks down is the thing, isn't it?
That's going to turn heads from a when did you last see one of those factor.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah. Go on then, Jamie. What's your second choice, sir?
My next one, it's another pillarless coupe, but it's a Mercedes this time. A Mercedes 560 SEC. Is it the W126, whatever they are?
Now, C126 for that shape. Yeah. But yeah, that's...
Oh, is it? Yes. I'd have any of those, to be fair, with the V8 one. If I could get one that's got the AMG wide body kit on, that is the most gangster car out there, I think.
Yeah.
Proper rude Merc spec, isn't it? Yeah. That is, for sure. Well, that's an excellent choice there, Jamie. Right, I would suggest, Joe, you've got your work cut out to match that iconic greatness.
I can't match the grandeur and certainly not the gangster factor of that. My next coupe choice was fairly obvious for me because it's got the word coupe in it. It's the Fiat Coupe. Now, obviously, I drove one earlier this year. It's been one of my attainable dream cars for a good few years now and just wonderful. That crisp angle styling with the double bubble headlights and that massive clamshell bonnet and all the slashes cut into it. I think it's a gorgeous looking thing. It's not sort of Alfa Romeo pretty, but I love the way it's so nicely proportioned. The 5-cylinder engine, the turbo one, is wonderful. So torquey, so powerful. The interior is crazy as well with that body-coloured metal dashboard. And it is a really old-school style of front-wheel drive chassis to drive in that it's got a lot of power, but you can't just throw it into a corner like a modern car and it looks after you. So you have to kind of slow in, fast out, respect what it can do. And it's so much fun to drive, like nothing I've ever driven. For what they are and the performance they offer and the style they offer and the exclusivity, actually, they're still a bit of a bargain. You can still get into a coupe 25 turbo for less than $5,000. It looks hugely tempting at that money. If I was going to have one, it would be 25 turbo. I wouldn't go crazy with modifying it. You have to put an exhaust on it because I think that 5-cylinder is criminal if you don't open it up a bit. But the only other thing I would do is, because I'm from the 90s, is I would put a dump valve big enough to swallow a pigeon on the thing, because I think you need to have all the turbo whoosh in the world. But yeah, just a crazy car. And when you see how far Fiat have fallen, you won't see the coupes like from them ever again. And I think that's a crying shame because it's a wonderful car. I love it.
I like the look of them as well. But the only criticism I would say about them is they always looked a bit under-wheeled to me. Like the wheels.
Yeah, they could do
small.
With another inch or so of wheel, couldn't they?
Yeah.
As I've said many a time before, if it had a Ford badge on the front rather than a Fiat badge, it would be a 30, 40, 50 grand car. But as it is, Whistler it, jump on them now while they're still cheap, because I think that's a fabulous car.
Yeah.
I've stuck Japanese with my second choice, and I think this is probably hankering after one that we actually previously owned it was actually a winner car. It was a competition car. We gave it away at our event, and that is a Honda CRX.
Of course.
Ideally a VTEC one, the 80s.
Is that a coupe?
Yes.
I think we could let him have that one.
It's a squash hatchback, isn't it?
Well, you could say that about the MX3, but
that's
it's
still true.
I'd obviously have the VTEC one if budget's allowed. I just remember thinking what a phenomenal car it was to fizz around in, and yeah, I loved it. I loved that low slung bit. I loved that sort of slightly quirky glass tailgate where there's still an extra bit of glass. It's Honda, isn't it? So it'll just go on forever.
They're gaining in popularity as well. There's a couple of high profile builds going on for the modified scene for those. So as we said earlier on, the sort of 80s and 90s stuff is coming back round in all sort of spheres. Yeah, so I think those two particular builds will bring up the values and it's the awareness again, isn't it? People go, oh, I remember them.
I think we paid about $5,000 for our one, albeit that was 5 or 6 years ago. And again, it's not a VTEC one, but what a VTEC one's worth now? Well over 10, surely.
A mint VTEC is $20,000 now.
I was going to say, yeah.
Japanese cars, they just skyrocketed. But yeah, that one of ours we had was just brilliant. And if you wanted proof that Honda knew how to do a front-wheel drive chassis, just brilliant. Great fun.
If anyone knows where our old one is, because obviously it was won by someone, but I believe they've since sold it. If anyone knows who owns it now, I do have the spare set of keys for it. I found them the other day in a bag. This is absolutely a true story. I found them.
Is that a threat or an offer? I don't know what that is.
Tell me where you live and I'll come and just pick it up for free. But no, I do have a spare set of keys for it. But anyway, listen, Jamie, your third and final choice.
Well, yes, I've gone British, you'll be pleased to know, for my third choice. And it's probably the most unreliable, irresponsible car on this list. And it is, of course, British, unreliable, TVR. I've gone for TVR just because I love them. I know it's not the sensible choice and I know it would ruin me. But yeah, for the one day out of the 10 years of ownership that it actually worked properly, it would just be awesome, wouldn't it?
On that sort of cold, wintry day, Jamie, you'd lift the garage door up and just stare at those gorgeous curves of the Cerbera and then jump in the C126 and drive off in that.
Yeah. And go, oh, I wish it worked, or I wish it was sunny, or I wish it didn't leak, I wish it was, yeah.
But it would be, you would drive it once a year, and for the one day a year it would work, it would stay with you enough to get you through to the next day that it works.
Yeah.
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 They are automotive theater, there's no doubt about it. They're brilliant. A very fine choice. So
it's a car that is not, you don't use it for a cardio in terms of a means of transport or whatever else. That is something that is a hobby. It is something you enjoy.
So, Joe, are you going slightly crazy like a TVR Cerbera, or are you going more sensible?
And maybe somewhere in between, shall we say. When we said coupe, I sort of thought, right, well, let's try one where it's a coupe variant where you can get other versions. And for the last three months now, or something like that, you and Jeff and everyone else will have had to endure me talking time and time and time again about the Porsche 911 997, which, given the choice, I would have as a coupe. My choice would be a Carrera 2S coupe, but I don't care what variant you give me. It's still wonderful. I will keep this short and sweet because I've talked about them a lot, and the upcoming road test video, I talk about them even more. But they are wonderful and fabulous and probably the best sports coupe of the 21st century. I'd go that far. Just epic, epic things. And there's not a whole lot to say about it that I haven't already said or will have said in an upcoming video. But if I could have one of those, I would be a very, very happy man.
It's slightly depressing for Jamie and I to know that that was your bedroom poster car when you were a kid.
Yes.
When Jamie and I were probably at work at that point.
At work, yeah.
That's probably
dreaming of owning one in future.
I'm very old now. This is the thing. And I sort of look, I'm like, oh, that's still a fairly new car. And then you look and realize it came out 22 years ago and go, hang on.
They are lovely. They are really good. It's the car the 996 should have been, of course, really.
For me, that was the poster. That was the bedroom wall pinup. It has to be a 997. It has to be a coupe. I watched a 3.6 Carrera go through British car auctions for 14,000, including fees. So maybe.
Anyway, if you've got a spare bedroom to rent out, Joe, maybe consider that as your option.
Yes, exactly.
997 ownership. Maybe that's the way to go.
Even though next week, we'll see a little bed in the background and you'll be always camping in the office.
Yeah. I've now realised that my choices were all slightly pigeonholed in the same vein, and you guys have done a much better job of coming up with perhaps more exciting choices. So I'm going to let everyone down with my third and final choice, because it's another sort of slightly curved ball, hatchbacky type thing, but it is the Volvo 480.
Right. Can we call that a coupe as well?
Head shape one.
Yeah, that's the one, the block of cheese.
It's a little bit mad, but in a lovely way. I love the pop-up lights. It's a Volvo. Volvo don't do coupes. It's mental. I know they did the P1800, but modern day Volvo, they didn't do that stuff. It was all boxy, sensible saloons and a state car. I don't even know if they're any good. I've never driven one. If anyone owns one, do let us know in the comments, because I wouldn't mind a driving one, really.
I can appreciate the quirkiness of the 480. The fact it's got pop-up lights, but then also like a traditional Volvo grill right at the bottom as well. It's worth noting, obviously, that paved way for the C30 in the modern era, which, again, they call a coupe. I would personally call the C30 a hatch, but they call that a coupe as well.
Yes. It's definitely not very coupe-like in its silhouette. It's like a profile, but a sporty, low-slung, three-door hatchback, I think, still just about passes as a coupe. Jamie's looking at me very judgmentally going, no, you're wrong.
But it's no 560 SEC, is it?
No, it is about as far removed from that as you could possibly get. I think I'm prepared to concede, gentlemen, that my three choices are a little bit dubious compared to your perhaps slightly higher class choices. So well done. Way,
you set the criteria of sporting coupe and then chose a Volvo 480.
I know. I didn't read my own brief, did I? But anyway.
Oh, no.
It's okay. It's fine. It's good. We're all fallible. But anyway, listen, to prove that point, my curveball for this buying round is I thought it might be quite good fun if we did a Secret Santa in July for each other. So basically, I'm going to choose a coupe for Joe. I think Jamie's going to choose one for me.
Yeah.
And I think Joe's going to choose one for Jamie.
Yes. And there was no precedent as to whether it was one we would like or one we wouldn't like. It was just had to be a coupe.
And I left that very vague. You could choose one that you think you would like, or it could be a kind of joke present one.
Well, if you go first and then Joe, and I'll go at the end, because I've got a little challenge for you.
Okay, so, interesting. Okay, yeah. So, Joe, you are going to love this.
I'm sure I am.
Is it a Capri? Please be a Capri.
Do you know what? I would have almost gone for a Capri, but instead, I have gone for the Mini Paceman.
Oh.
There was only one other car that I thought could probably trump that in terms of horror for you, and that was the BMW X6.
Well, yeah, I was going to second worst. There you go. Okay.
I have found a 2014 Mini Paceman. It's the 2-litre diesel auto.
God.
So I think it's even your dream / nightmare spec.
God, so it's not, you couldn't even like, it's not even the manual one that you could have a bit of fun. Oh, God, that's horrendous. So it's like a Mini Countryman, only with less space in it and even more hideous.
It's not even the petrol Cooper S model, which is at least a little bit fizzy, but yes. You're welcome.
Thanks, I hate it. That's terrible.
So that's
horrendous.
Yes, I do apologise, but Joe, do you have one for Jamie?
I do. Yes, I thought on generous lines here. I thought, well, you like a Manta, as we talked about recently, and you like your 90s, you like your tuning. Obviously, you had your Saf Cosworth and so on. Now, I'll be honest with you, this choice is so rare these days. I couldn't find one for sale.
Right.
So this will have to be an IOU present. But I would buy you, sir, a Vauxhall Calibra 4x4 turbo.
Oh, okay. That could have been a lot worse.
That's very generous.
A lot worse.
So, like the Calibra. Excellent chassis. Obviously, 4x4 turbo. It's the thinking man's Sapphire Cosworth, or Escort Cosworth. Very tunable. 90s tuning icon. And if you can find one that hasn't been wrapped around a hedge or covered in hideous body bits, I think you've got a collector's item.
So it's and certainly rarer than a Sapphire these days. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, no, good choice. I'd rock one of them.
If I could find you one, I would hypothetically get it for you, sir.
So karma suggests that Jamie's got to pick something absolutely horrendous for me, like some sort of Hyundai Accent.
Well, you say that, right? And this is where my little quiz comes in. Because I tried. I really, really tried. But I don't think I can find a car that you will dislike. So I've got a list here that I think you'll go, yeah, actually, I'll take that. So kicking things off, before we get to my actual choice, a Rover 218. You'd take that, wouldn't you?
As in the R8 coupe?
Rover R8, yeah.
Yeah, 100% I'd have one of those, yeah.
Great car. Hyundai S coupe.
Which generation?
The roundy shape, well, I don't know the numbers, so the mid-90s.
Yeah, I'm less keen on those because they're a bit of a funny shape thing. They kind of look like a bit of a sort of illegitimate love child of the coupe that Joe, the Fiat Coupe that Joe likes. It's just a less successful version of all its funny strengths and things. The first gen one, super rare, I'd have one of those in a heartbeat, but there must be like one in the world.
Yeah, not many of them. What about Renault Megane Coupe?
I would have one.
There's also a lot more of this. Probe? I know you like Ford Probe.
100%. I'd want the V6, or at least if it was the 2 litre, I'd want the V6 wheels on it, but carry on.
Yeah. Curveball one, Proton Coupe. Remember them late 80s?
Yes, I would have one of those. I drove one up to Aberdeen once through the night. Loved it. Great.
Is the one I think I might catch you out on, Vauxhall Tigra.
Ooh, I probably still would, though. That's the problem. I think time's been kind.
Another slight oddball one, don't see many of these. 406 Coupe, Peugeot 406 Coupe.
Yeah, 406, not 407. 407,
yeah,
I think. 406,
definitely, yeah. But, so that was my list of, like, let me try and find some of the worst things I can think of. So the one I settled on in the end was the Chrysler Crossfire.
I probably still would. That's the trouble. It's funny, isn't it, how time passes. Like, the Chrysler Crossfire Coupe in particular, I think Jeremy Clarkson described it as like a puppy taking a poo. I probably would have a Roadster because they're quite cheap, but the Coupe I would still have. So,
can I slightly admit that I quite like Chrysler Crossfires?
Yeah.
In the right colour and as a manual, not the dim-witted auto, I there is a certain appeal to them.
See, I'm like, what's the worst Coupe I can possibly think of?
We may not see Jamie on this chat show again. No, he's had enough. He's decided this is where taste comes to die, clearly. Well, that was a lot of fun, gentlemen. I enjoyed that buying roundup, and I particularly liked our little Secret Santa in July moment there. That was great. So moving on to what we're doing this weekend / in the near future. Jamie, you've already, I think, flagged that you might be off to a Ford show.
I'm also decorating my daughter's bedroom, so it depends on what happens with weather-wise. I want to try and get out in the Mondeo at some point, try and get some miles on it, see what goes, what else is wrong with it, because obviously we haven't driven it yet. So yes, although it's all solid and has passed an inspection, until we get up to temperature and start driving along, I don't know what it's going to do. So that's one thing. That's pretty much my plans for the next.
Are you sure you don't want to go to the Mini / Metro Day at British Motor Museum, which I think is this weekend? Or if you've missed that one, you could go to the BMC BL Rally, also at British Motor Museum, the week after. He looks blank.
Not
at
in
me saying, no.
Yeah, not in
Joe,
the
what about you, sir?
I'll be on my way to Snetterton in Norfolk for the next round of the British Superbikes. Obviously, we're on to round 4 now, because I talked about this previously. Went to Alton Park. I'd never been to Alton Park before. That was great. Loved it. There's been 2 subsequent rounds. Knock Hill in Scotland was sunny for the first time in, as far as anyone can remember. But yeah, Snetterton is the next one, and I love Snet. I went there for the first time a few years ago. It's a brilliant track. Because it's Norfolk, it's flat, and therefore you can see all of it. So from a spectator's point of view, Snetterton's really good. I always look forward to it. The weather, touch wood, is supposed to be really nice and sunny, so that's excellent. Not to sort of reassure myself too much, but my sort of guess at the beginning of the season that it was going to be Kyle Ride who was leading, he's currently got a commanding lead and he's won something like 8 of the last 9 races or something. So yeah, be interested to
that
see
sounds
that
very
moves.
Boring and predictable. That sounds almost F1 like, Joe, doesn't it?
Well, no, because people do overtake in that, so it's quite interesting. So yeah, I'm utterly excited for that.
Snetterton is a great circuit. I think that was your local circuit, wasn't it, Jamie, back in the day?
Yeah, that was before they did the Snetterton 300 layout. I moved away when they revamped it. But I do like that. It's a lovely track.
We're recording this just before the weekend of the 4th and 5th of July. So rather fittingly for the 4th of July, we're going to be celebrating American classic cars at our Stars and Stripes event up at Tatton Park. So I'm going to be there at least one of the days, and our fellow videographer Joe Dawes, our resident American car apologist, is also going to be there, I think, with his dad, because they both love their Yank tanks, so they're going to be there in force. So yeah, looking forward to that. And as you say, the weather forecast is looking quite decent. But I must also give a shout out to the Bromley Pageant of Motoring, which is back on the 19th of July, so in a couple of weeks' time. It's now down at the South of England Showground, where we also host Volksworld and Classic Ford. It moved to that venue last year. It's back there again this year with a few tweaks to cater for all the cars that are there. Loads of one-make parking and club displays. I've not been there since it moved to the new venue, but it was one of the very first events I went to, having joined Kelsey as it was, and with all our car events and shows and magazines and what have you. I imagine it's going to be a fantastic variety of anything from the humdrum to the exotica. So I'm looking forward to it. Maybe I'll see a C126 coupe for Jamie.
Or a high-end IS coupe.
Sunday the 19th of July at the South of England Showground. So, yeah, do get your ticket. A little shameless plug, if I may, for some of our Bookazine products. As I said, it's the Mini and Metro Day at British Motor Museum this coming weekend. And it's also 25 years, believe it or not, of the BMW Mini, the R50.
Blimey.
And years ago, we produced a magazine called Modern Mini, which then latterly became Performance Mini. And Jamie, you were the editor for a short spell at that time.
Yes.
Yeah, and out of that, we actually spun a couple of performance bookazines, including one called Performance Minis. And so if you are interested in any of that modern BMW tomfoolery, there is a product with your name on it. And as you've mentioned, Rude Boy Mercedes, Jamie, there is also a Performance Mercedes bookazine that we've got out, which is all about those very sort of modified AMG type stuff. It's recently been re-released because it's got some extra content added into it. Do check it out. But anyway, there we go.
So, right, in the description as ever.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Sorry, Joe. I need to get better at that. Yeah. Links in the description if you wish to purchase any of those products or book tickets to Romilly Pageant of Motoring. Right. Final segment, chaps. Our want of the week. Something that's caught our eye that if money was no object and we didn't have mortgages and things like that to look after, we would be definitely ringing up for. So, Jamie, our want of the week. Go for it.
It's in lots of different things. Going on my Opel theme, I did see, you know, I said I wanted a Manta with a 24-valve in it. I saw a Monza GSE 24-valve straight six in it. That looks lovely in that sort of dark metallic blue. Yeah, so that was one that caught my eye. But the other thing that caught my eye, nothing that I want, but I did see a black Ford Mondeo ST24 with similar miles to mine up for £4,000. So that caught my eye for obvious reasons as well. So, yeah.
Because you're going to go and sell yours for $3,995 just to sort of undercut that one.
To make it a bargain, yeah.
Yeah. Go on in, Joe. What's your want of the week, sir?
You know when you're being stalked by a certain car, either a particular example or you keep seeing examples of them on the road and you feel like the universe is trying to tell you something. In the last couple of weeks, with how nice the weather's been, I've seen 4 or 5 different R107 SLs. Of various different colours and specs and engines, and they've all had the roof down, and they've all had sort of glamorous kind of middle-age upwards people driving them, you know, and the lady in the passenger seat with the scarf and just looking utterly cool. So that's what I'm lusting after. There's one in the upcoming Hobbs Parker auction, actually. But as you listen to this, it will be up for auction next Wednesday. It's a 500 SL in red. It's magnificent and it has the hard top. If I could have an R107, I most definitely would. I think they're wonderful and perfect for the weather we've got at the moment. That for me is glamour and class personified.
I've obviously had a bit of a humdrum week because my want of the week isn't that kind of desirable, I would argue. But I've been looking at modern classic Volvos.
As you do.
Maybe off the back of my 480 coupe choice. Not really a coupe, really a hatchback. The Volvo S80 aged quite well. And we had that Mega Miler one years ago, which just drove really well. But then I went down this rabbit hole of looking at all that kind of era, that sort of V70, S40s and stuff like that. To sort of marry onto that just a little bit, this sort of came up yesterday. I was driving back from an event at Stoneleigh. There was this young lad driving a late 90s Saab 900, so still the kind of Cavalier-based one. But I just thought, are they living their best life there? It's a more interesting choice than buying a five-year-old Micra or something. And he's just tooling along having a nice time. So there's something in that kind of, they're probably not that expensive.
Something sort of retro, you're sort of thinking kind of modern classic retro Swedish.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could get on board with that. My girlfriend's got a C30, has done for a few years now. And on all the groups on Facebook, on a fairly regular basis, you hear of young people saying, oh, where's the best place to get an insurance quote for my first car? It's like the idea 10 years ago of a 17-year-old wanting a Volvo as their first car would have been properly unusual. But like now, they're old enough to be cool and are a bit different. Yeah, I can get on board with that.
No, very good. I just want to quickly rattle off some comments from our last week's podcast about 80s icons, because apart from the observation that apparently that I need to turn the lighting down on my camera, because someone said here, the glare from his forehead requires some of us to wear welding goggles. Harsh, but probably fair. Other 80s picks from our 80s icon piece was a Mercedes 190, which I think is very good.
Yeah.
People agreed with you, Joe, I think, on Audi Quattro. Opel Monza, that's come up. You just mentioned that today, Jamie. or an Opel Senator. Merc's come up a lot. Sierra Cosworth, a Ferrari Testarossa. That's a great shout, that one. And a Porsche 959. Someone's mentioned the Citroen BX GTI as a bit of a curveball, which I quite like.
It's a curveball. I quite like that.
Ferrari F40. A Lamborghini Countach is an interesting one because, a bit like some of the cars we chose, that's a 70s car that probably did reach peak notoriety in the 80s. So that's an interesting one. A Fiat Panda, someone's mentioned. Toyota Fantastic. Corolla A86, BMW Z1, and a Lancia Delta Integrale.
We've got some, there's some taste there. Wow, there's some great choices.
There really are. Yes, that's brilliant. We really appreciate the feedback, and I encourage you all to get involved. It's a friendly space. All comments are welcome, even ones about slightly glary foreheads. But I think, yes, do please like and subscribe if you're following us on YouTube, and don't forget to give us a rating, a follow, or a review if you're listening on a podcast platform of choice. We are available on all the main platforms: Apple, Amazon, Spotify, etc. Jamie King, thank you very much, and Joe Miller, as ever, for your time, and thank you guys at home for following us along, and we'll catch you again next time.
Bye.
See you later.